What else could go wrong with my day? Who's there? Oh no, here comes the colonel.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
Oh, that's really great. Even the president comes by to cause mischief on this program. Well, welcome back to the second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. Before we get back to our friend Byron Rees, the Chief Innovation Officer for Demand Media, and his predictions of the future, we're going to hear. Byron is talking about how technology will end poverty, disease, hunger, ignorance, and war, and his talk at the International Humanitarian Conference going on Seattle, Washington. We'll have more on that in a little bit. And of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we have here on the set and ask today's query. How about it?
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
Ah, yes, there we have the old spirit of the fountain. I knew he'd wake up as soon as we threw in the coins, because he knows all, hears all, sees all, and even tells all for a price. All right, oh, spirit of the fountain, put on your thinking cap now. Here it goes. Which candy bar was eaten first? Which was the very first candy bar between the three? Milky Way, Snickers, or Three Musketeers? The question of the day, oh, spirit of the fountain. Which candy bar came first? Milky Way, Snickers, or Three Musketeers? Huh?
I have given you my answer. And now you may tell the others.
No, cannot fool the old spirit of the fountain. He remembers. It goes way back. But the very first candy bar between the three, Milky Way, Snickers, the Three Musketeers, well, in honor of the landing on Mars this past week, why don't we just say the Milky Way, huh? Because that's what it was. All right, back to our guest.
With everything you do, everything is recorded, at least for your own benefit. Like every time your heart beats, everything your eye tracks to, every breath you take, everything you pause to read, and your physiological response to it, everything you pause when you're flipping through the channels, like the minutia of your life all coming together in truly big data fashion, and then all of that being mined for learnings and that will advise other people.
This is really hard to imagine, Byron. I mean, first of all, Amazon gets it wrong with me lots of times. Second of all, is that somebody just recently must have taken my email address and sold it to somebody, because I am being spammed all over the place. I could imagine this kind of access to the things that people like being really misused and abused. And of course, what you're saying, it isn't a matter of recording the data. It's a matter of how we access it, how we index it, how we find it again. Aren't what you're talking about a terribly complicated system to manage?
Well, so to begin with, of course Amazon gets it wrong. I mean, it isn't that we've arrived at this place. The question is, do they ever get it right? And if they get it right, what we have ever is what we have at our back, you know, our Moore's Law, which says every 18 months, the ability, the functionality of these processors will double, and the price of storage will halve, and all of these things. You know, technology is about to go, you know, vastly grow exponentially, as it has been. It was somebody who said that after years of advancement, computers are finally entering their infancy, or something along those lines. That we're reaching this giant inflection point where what we're going to be able to do is vastly more than it is now. So the question is it possible? Not have we arrived at it? But I won't argue that there are real privacy standpoints, real privacy questions, but I'm not talking about like some overarching, you know, system with a capital S that, you know, dystopian visions of the future, you know, comes alive or something like that. I mean, you start with something very simple, which is your cell phone knows where you are, right? I mean, because it's got GPS built in.
Okay.
And you think, would you allow your phone to broadcast its location? Nothing having to do with you at all. Nothing. Just that I'm a phone and I'm here. Because if you could do that, you would have a perfectly fluid model for traffic. And you could route, you could distribute that, and you could route everybody going from point A to point B on different routes. And you could get everybody there much faster. And all you have to do is be willing to say, there's a phone right here. And that's nothing about you. Nobody knows whose phone it is. And so it's like piece by piece by piece. You'll build it. I mean, I think what we have learned with the Internet has taught us a lot of things about ourselves. And one thing that it has taught us is the degree to which we're willing to help other people for nothing in return. I mean, I guarantee you, if I posted to a forum, hey, I'm going to Seattle with my wife and four children, and what are some things we should do? I guarantee you people will respond to that, and they'll write some big, long post, and they'll put their with no hope of anything in return. You think about things like Wikipedia and the open source movement and Creative Commons, and it turns out we all have this instinctive desire to want to share and help with other people. Mm-hmm. And so as people have their digital echo, this file that is everything, all the minutiae of their life, you start by saying, would they be willing to share any part of it anonymously, having nothing to do with them, but just share it? For instance, if you go to a movie, it's known you're at the movie, right? Or your system, your computer would know you're at this movie. You bought tickets online, the GPS says you're there. And what if halfway through the movie you got up and left? Well, that says something. That's a vote, you know, is about whether the movie was good or bad. It's a passive vote. You didn't tell anybody you thought it was good or bad. You just got up and left. Mm-hmm. And so if somebody said, hey, every time you get up and leave a movie midway through, would you allow that to be shared? Not that you did it, but just that somebody your age and gender got up and left. And I think people would. I think people are willing to share information. And then you say, well, wow, then you have a whole database of people who get up and leave movies. And you instantly can say, wow, they hated this movie, or they loved it, or what have you. So you have to imagine kind of like it forming slowly with a thousand point solutions, you know, Amazon doing it here and traffic people doing it here. And over time, more stuff gets recorded, processors get ever faster, the algorithms get smarter, and more than anything, they benefit our lives. When you get a tangible benefit from this, you'll be more inclined to be willing, like, okay, I'll throw my info in. I mean, people already share disease information, for instance, if they have certain incurable or problematic illnesses, they'll share all their medical records with everybody else in the hopes that solutions can be found to that. And I just think that will happen on a mass scale.
Well, that's some pretty fascinating stuff, Byron. Now, you've talked about the big data, and of course, my mind is going nuts over trying to figure out how to index all this stuff and how all this is going to be managed. And it kind of leads then to your book, where you say technology is going to end poverty, disease, hunger, ignorance, and war. How is this sort of the data accumulation and sifting through going to help the humanitarian effort?
Well, a few things. So when you look at something like disease, you have to say, what kind of problem is disease? And you answer it by saying, disease is nothing but a technological problem. It is a problem of technology. There's no reason there has to be disease. There simply is disease because we don't have the technology to eliminate it. And then you have to say, well, what's the pace of technological change? And then you say, wow, it's hit this inflection point where, you know, every couple of years, all these things kind of double. And again, and again, and again, and again. So you say, well, we're bringing ever more technology to bear on what is fundamentally a technological problem. So you then have to pose the question, make at least enter the possibility that we may, in fact, be able to end disease because we can solve this technological dilemma. And I take a lot of comfort because you think of something like smallpox. You know, in its last 100 years, smallpox killed 500 million people, probably more than every war ever. 500 million people, and yet we learned to vaccinate against it in the 1790s. Before we even knew germ theory, we made a vaccination for it, and we eliminated it. You know, we eliminated smallpox. You look at something like polio. You know, Jonas Salk made the vaccine against it before he could sequence his genome, before he had anything like what we have, and we have reduced the incidence of polio around the world to less frequent than death by lightning strikes. I mean, it's not eliminated, but it's within distance. So you say, wow, we were able to essentially eliminate these horrible diseases in a no technology world, and so low. But then you say, well, now, you know, we can deconstruct this virus to its core. We can see every jot and tittle of its form, and can, you know, are we going to be able to figure out a way to eliminate it? And so I think we can take a lot of comfort that things that are purely technological problems will have technological solutions, and we will discover them. There are a lot of things technology won't help with. It's not going to, you know, help with pride or envy or hatred or any of these you know, problems whose fundamental challenge is how do we become better people. It's not really going to help with those. But things like hunger, which is just a technological problem, things like poverty, which I think is just a technological problem, it will eliminate. And then what happens is and war, which is a kind of a special case. And when you don't have those things in the world, when you don't have hungry people, and when you don't have disease, and when you don't have extreme poverty, and when you don't have war, it's just like lets the pressure off on all these other aspects of life. And that's why I call it a golden age. It'll be, I think, a time of peace and a time of prosperity and health, and people will make better choices. Gene Roddenberry said, in the 24th century, there will be no hunger and there will be no greed, and all the children will know how to read. And I think that I think it's very true. And the thing is I actually see not just kind of a path to get there, but we're rocketing towards that world right now. And that may seem like an overly optimistic claim, but the way I approach these things is to say, is there a solution to them? Is there any reason this thing has to exist? And if not, is the solution technological? And if it is, then say, is somebody going to get paid a whole lot of money to solve it? And if the answer is yes, then you can just kind of say, yeah, that's going to get done. That's why I don't worry about things like, you know, energy or clean water or all these other factors that people kind of hand-wring over, because they're just technological problems, and the market has put huge incentives in to solve for them, and technology is advancing at this amazing clip, and so it is inevitable, all but inevitable, that we will solve for these.
All right, now I've got to ask you. I mean, the storage of all this wisdom. I mean, do you see one big storage area like at the Smithsonian Institute or the British Museum or something like that, or do you see a whole lot of different servers all tagged into to one major one, and then this one big wisdom network? Does this then become the new government or the new god of mankind, and then where does that take it? Does that end the superstitious religions that permeated the world all these years, and finally goes out with all this faith that isn't based on any kind of logic or any kind of reason or anything like that, and religions go away? Where is this really going?
I don't know. I mean, I couldn't say whether I think there'll be... I mean, I don't think there'll be some... If you look at what is kind of organically forming, the Internet certainly isn't migrating towards some big central storage of the information on it. I mean, if anything, it's moving away from that, you know, it's highly distributed. And I think that in my information, I think, will always be my information, and therefore my property, and I will own it. And those are issues we need to work through, because they're all so new to us. We haven't really, you know, kind of, that's why you're getting spammed. You know, we haven't really quite solved for that. But I think my hope is that people will own their information and share it when they deem themselves either to get a benefit from it or want to altruistically contribute it to other people. You already have things where you can share, you know, all of your, like I said, your medical records online. You can submit your genome to a huge database of everybody else's genomes for people to study. And I think, like I said, I assert people will want to contribute to it, but if for no other reason than for the betterment of humanity.
Well, there are those who believe that we should rebuild the Internet, that the Internet as it is right now is totally useless, and it is open to too much mischief. Do you see rebuilding the Internet in order to accomplish these things that you're describing?
I don't think I can speak terribly directly to that. I mean, I would say all of this, I think, will be market-driven in that... All of this has such a huge benefit to people that there's bound to be a way for value to be extracted by entrepreneurs. So I think that what will happen is the markets are very good at making solutions to problems that are both technological and they're compensated for. So I don't know how that would manifest itself, other than to say I think it will be highly, highly distributed.
All right, so you're giving us a picture of what the future is likely to be, since we have all this accumulation of all this information, but you're not able to quite yet say exactly how it's going to work, except that it will evolve, and that like everything else, we'll kind of trial and error and make it work as we go. Is that what I'm hearing?
I think so. I mean, I think you one has to say what are unquestionable trends that are happening. Well, one of them is more data is being digitally recorded than ever, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, more things are essentially have storage or connected to storage, and so you've got massive amounts of data coming on.
Mm-hmm.
True?
Yeah, sure.
And then you say, okay, are processors getting faster, and are they going to continue to get faster? And is storage going to get cheaper? And is bandwidth going to get virtually free? And is this data, is there anything inside this data that is useful? You know, you take a simple example, like there's a drug called Wellbutrin. And Wellbutrin is a antidepressant.
Mm-hmm.
And some people taking Wellbutrin happen to report, hey, my cravings for cigarettes have gone down since I've been on this. And the makers, GlaxoSmithKline, said, really? Okay, that's interesting. We'll do some studies. And they do these studies, and they find out that, in fact, this Wellbutrin drug helps people stop smoking.
Hmm.
Now, you think about that. We just, like, stumbled into that. Like, remember the old Reese's Peanut Butter Cup commercials? Your chocolate's in my peanut butter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We just stumble across this stuff, all of these causes and effects in our world that we don't know any, that we just maybe notice. Like that children in schools with fluorescent lighting get fewer cavities than children in schools with incandescent lighting.
Really?
And the reason is fluorescent lighting causes your mouth to produce saliva, which it fights tooth decay. And so everything in the world is kind of connected to everything else in ways that we don't understand, can't comprehend, because our minds are really locked into, you know, we're just not good at handling vast amounts of data. So then you say, wow, if all this data comes on, are all these connections going to be found? Like, people who use a certain brand of detergent are more prone to depression or something like that, where all of these causal relationships will be kind of sifted out of the data. And then we'll say, wow, maybe something in this detergent causes problems. We need to study this. And so it's all in there. It's all in the data. And what happens is, in the past, we never recorded it, and processing cycles were expensive, and storage was expensive. And if you drop all those to zero, including the cost of collecting data, then you kind of want to collect everything, sort through it all for what you can learn, and come up with these vast, these amazing new findings that no human will ever figure out, but, you know, but influence our lives. It's staggering the number of scientific advancements that come from accidents, like penicillin, you know, finding penicillin, discovering x-rays. You know, we just kind of stumble. Our descendants will look back on us and wonder how we got anything done. We just kind of stumbled through life, just running our lives based on simple anecdotal evidence, like, well, Aunt Martha took a vitamin C every morning and she never got cold, so I guess I'll take one. You know, that's kind of how we operate. And in the future, once the entire collective activity of the planet is kind of logged and computers can sift through it all, we're going to have these like amazing new findings. We'll really be able to optimize our lives and maximize human existence.
It sounds like it could be the end of politics, the end of debate. It sounds like it could be the end of religion, as I mentioned a minute ago. Is that a prediction you could make for the future? Or maybe you'd like to sum up for us, you know, put on the meditation cap there for a minute and look into the future and give us a succinct prediction. What do you see?
Well, to answer your earlier question, I think people will still not get along very well, because we all have kind of different ways we determine, you know, what is true and what is real. We have different value sets that we apply against those. We have different priorities. So humanity, I think, will always have friction. Well, I think we'll always, you know, read Shakespeare. I think we'll always relate to all of those kinds of things. I think when you, like I said earlier, let off some of the steam that makes all these things worse, I think that humanity will just, you know, breathe a sigh of relief and move forward much smoother. And then, you know, I think in terms of predictions, I think that we'll have vastly more prosperity, and that we'll redefine poverty upward dramatically, and that, you know, that people will, there will be no poverty. And I think war will end through a number of factors, like, you know, it's very interesting the way economic accomplishments have replaced military ones for people. It used to be that, you know, you ran off and, you know, join the army and made a name for yourself in war, and now, you know, you drop out of college and run off and start Facebook or whatever. You know, we're changing kind of what's important to society, what marks success and things like that. And so I think there are a lot of factors that are going to bring about an end to war very shortly.
Wow, that would be really, really good news. An end to war very shortly. Wow.
Yeah, it just becomes, you'll end war when you make peace a more attractive opportunity for everyone. And that either involves making war extremely expensive or making peace extremely profitable. And I think kind of both of those things are happening. I think as war becomes, I read an estimate that if Tokyo were leveled by an earthquake, it would cost over $1 trillion to repair it, just an earthquake. So you can imagine, you know, that's a huge disincentive to any modern country to engage in any war that's going to, for instance, level their cities, right? Because mm-hmm. it just the economic costs of that are just way too high. And then as standard of living rises, people are less inclined to go to war. I mean, there's a, in the book, I give 45 reasons I think war will end. And so I won't wear on anybody's patience and go through them right now, but I think it's an overwhelming tide. And I know all these things. I mean, in my heart, I'm kind of a historian, and so I know ignorance and disease and poverty and hunger and war are historic norms. And so the burden of proof is squarely on anybody who says somehow the future is going to be different than the past. But I think that it will be, and I think it's based on a reasoned analysis of all these trends we're in the middle of right now, not on some oh gee whiz I hope kind of thing.
Well, Byron, I notice you are a bit of a historian. I really loved the quote that you attributed to George Custer, is that there's not enough Indians in the world to defeat the 7th Cavalry. I've studied Custer a lot and found him to be quite fascinating. I've never run across that quote. Now, is that just something that you threw in there because it's kind of fun, or did he really say that?
No, I'll fact check it. I can still change it before the book comes out. I'll have to double check it because that's one of those. But I didn't just haul off and make it up. But I'll double check it. Yeah, it's great. That's in a chapter towards the end of the book called "What Could Possibly Go Wrong?" Because you know you kind of have to ask that question: is wow, all this great stuff's about to happen. Is there anything that can derail it? And so that was kind of like Custer didn't think anything could possibly go wrong, and that didn't work out so well for him.
All right, Byron Reese, Chief Innovation Officer for Demand Media out of Austin, Texas, talking about the titled Big Data and the Coming Golden Age of Humanity. He's going to be a featured speaker at the Global Humanitarian Technology Conference, October 21st through the 24th in Seattle, Washington. And you can find out more information about that particular conference at our website on the right-hand side of the screen. Byron, thank you so much for being with us. You've been a fascinating guest.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
It all starts with respect. And my wife told me one time, I came home from work, and I was a little edgy, and she says to me, "Harry, I can't hear you when you use that tone of voice." And I went, whoa, there's a wake-up call. And I think we have to think all the time about being respectful of everybody we work with and everybody in our family. Because if you have respect, then you can gain trust. And once you gain that trust, you can do miracles. Hi, this is Harry Arnold, Vice President of Product Technology for the Goodrich Corporation.
So you decide. Has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.